Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I'm Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David.
Yes.
How you doing?
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic about the future of movies.
Oh.
I think. Right. We know, you know, the WGA and SAG strike continue to drag on. But you know, I have a friend of mine just made a short film. He got waivers to make a short film. I was recently at an event for an independent movie called Fremont, where two of the actors got waivers from SAG to do a Q&A afterwards. And then Adam Driver is at the Venice Film Festival promoting Michael Mann's Ferrari, which, again, he is allowed to do because not just Ferrari or whatever, but Neon, the distributor of Ferrari, is exempt from SAG because they've met the demands, as have A24, as have STX Entertainment. And so it feels like increasingly these big studios are shooting themselves in the foot and just leaving the door wide open for smaller and mid-budget movies and movie makers and movie distributors to fill a vacuum. And so it weirdly, I mean, they, in my personal life, this is very bad. This could be the end of my job. But it does feel like movies are finding a way, if you will.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember years ago, you and I did an episode where we talked about, like, the personalities of studios or whatever we called it.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
And when I think of something like this, I think of, like, oh, well, why would these smaller studios, why would they be so quick to accommodate SAG? And I thought of two things. Number one, you know, from a publicity standpoint, they need the actors out there, you know, to promote it. You know, bigger studios don't necessarily need that. Like, you know, if it's a Marvel movie, it promotes itself. But so there was that. And then I thought, oh, right. Because, you know, there's still studios, but I think it just indicates such a difference in philosophy between the big studios and these little guys. Like, I'll say this, you know, I've learned a lot about, like, what the average person thinks about movies in the last year, because I'll talk about it with, like, nurses and CNAs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And A24 is, like, maybe the only studio that they're consistently aware of, which is interesting. Like,
yeah.
I've had people, like, they know the studio more than they know any individual director. So, like that movie, Talk to Me, came out, and a lot of people said, like, oh, man, I'm excited to see that new A24 horror movie, Talk to Me. And I was like, oh, that's very interesting. And so, like, so A24, and I think for people like you and I, Neon, like, these are studios that are becoming a little bit better known, and they're better known for, like, quality movies. And so I think their attitude towards, like, well, we got to accommodate the artists, right? You know, I think that's indicative of just a different philosophy towards movies between them and the bigger studios.
There's also just the fact that so much of the points of contention have to do with streaming and writers' room for series.
Right.
Two things that these indie movie producers and distributors don't really have to be worried about.
Yeah, that's
they don't
true.
Have, you know, there isn't an A24 app or over-the-top service. And they, I guess A24 does do some series, but not nearly as...
They did
Rami.
They did Beef.
Beef was them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even then, they're not the ones... It's not their service, you know?
Right.
Rami's on Hulu and Beef is on Netflix. So maybe, but this is all comes back to what I'm saying is that, like, if the big studios are insisting that movies and TV need to be made their way, maybe it's time for that way to die out. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die, as Jackson Maine sang in A Star Is Born.
Yeah, it's, I do think, like, obviously, like, big studios are never going to fully die, but I do think that something like this is an opportunity for the smaller studios to really, like, put out products that people like, and that are, like, genuinely good, because I don't know, maybe I'm sort of a Pollyanna about this, but I do believe that, like, the movies that people tend to remember through the years are genuinely good movies. Like, it's rare, I think, for, like, a really, like, just a shitty, like, studio calculation. I feel like it's rare for that to, like, really stick with people. And so I feel like we could be entering an era where there's a lot more of those, like, you know, mid-budget to low-budget movies that are nonetheless really click with people. And I think that is one of the, you know, one of the good things that could come out of this situation.
I saw someone else speculating on, I can't remember if it was Blue Sky or Twitter, one of those places. One, you know, as we've seen these smaller distributors cut their own deals.
Yeah.
At some point, will the studios that are still more traditional, like Sony, who doesn't really have, like, a streaming, or Paramount, who has Paramount Plus, but is still, like, it's not really, like, owned and operated by tech bros like the other ones are. Like, will there come a point where major studios will peel off with their own deals, or will there be solidarity? Because is Sony looking at this and being like, the things that David Zaslav and Ted Sarandos and stuff are fighting for aren't really, like, that beneficial to us, or at least not as beneficial as getting back into production? You know, will a Sony break at some point, or will they stick together?
Well, increasingly, I do think that, you know, this is a conversation people have been having about streaming services, that there's just so many of them that, like, every studio, every network eventually has their own streaming service. And I do think that whether it be the studios themselves, you know, like you say Solidarity, I say Monolithic, you know, whether it be the studios themselves or streaming services, like, it's very quickly turning into a situation where, like, it's kind of like every man for himself. Like, every studio is going to have to just kind of look after themselves. And I do think that could absolutely happen, which is, like, it's like, well, if we're, it's like we're shooting ourselves in the foot out of solidarity with these other studios that are our competition, you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah.
Let's just do what's right for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get Venom 3 into production.
No, boy.
All right. Well,
no, never mind. Everything I said, never mind.
I want to real quick tell you about tweakedaudio.com if I can. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. I still use them each and every day of my life. Tyler doesn't have cause to right now, but
that's true.
He'll get back to it. Today I was listening. I know I've called these out before that Stereo Gum often does these write-ups of movies, sorry, albums on either their 10th or 20th anniversary. And sometimes it's like, oh, wow, I can't believe it's been 20 years since Lifted by Bright Eyes came out or whatever, and I revisit a classic. Sometimes it's like, it's been 10 years since this album that I ignored the first time came out. And so they highlighted Ariana Grande's album Yours Truly, which is 10 years old now. And so I've been listening to that. And I know I sound like an old idiot, but, like, what a talent, Ariana Grande.
I think she's going places.
Yeah. It's not just that she has a great voice, but, you know, there's something said when it comes to pop stars. I don't know to what extent Ariana Grande writes her own songs. I don't want to get into that, but to some extent a pop star is like an interpreter of songs. Yeah. And it takes not just a great voice, but great, like, musical know-how to know how to sing a song the best possible way.
Yeah.
And so I've been listening to this album a couple times now. I really like it. There's a song on it called Tattooed Heart that is probably my new favorite Ariana Grande song. It's so great. And it sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tyler, we're back.
Yeah.
Let's get into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
It is. I am about to ship all, to ship up to Toronto.
Yeah.
For
I didn't know they were drafting critics these days.
Yeah. That's also not a port city. but yeah, I'm about to go to Toronto for the 2023 Toronto International Film Festival. I have yet to select my ticket. The ticket selection for press for Toronto is usually, it's like just a few days before.
Oh my.
I think our friend Mariah said 1 year she was literally like at the airport waiting to fly to Toronto when the ticketing went into like doing it at the airport. So yeah, I'll be selecting my tickets in a few days. I hope it's not a complete clusterfuck like it was last year, and I actually get the tickets that I want. But you're going to help me decide what those movies might be. So
of course.
This is I can't remember if you came up with this or if Scott did.
I think I did.
Okay, you came up with this
because I was tired of just sitting back and listening.
Scott and I previewing festivals you weren't going to. So yeah. Now you get to help me pick. So I'm picking a bunch of movies that are actually like playing at the same time, and you are going to help me decide. So my first conundrum.
The first, what do you call it? The first matchup.
Yeah, the first matchup.
Yeah.
Yes. A movie called, I almost said a new movie. These are all new movies.
Yeah.
A new movie called The Convert, directed by Lee Tamahori, who made The Edge.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I can't read the whole description, but Lee Tamahori's action-filled historical epic stars Guy Pearce as Thomas Monroe, a newly arrived preacher in a colonial town in early 19th century New Zealand, who finds himself at the center of a long-standing battle between two Maori tribes.
Okay.
I like Lee Tamahori. I like Guy Pearce. It does smack of potential, like, white savior stuff.
But there's also Red Harvest Yojimbo quality to it as well.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So that is up against a movie called North Star that is the directorial debut of the great actor Kristin Scott Thomas.
Oh,
for
okay.
For feature directorial debut, Kristin Scott Thomas leads Scarlett Johansson and Sienna Miller, the American Sniper's wife.
Right.
In a charming family drama about three sisters who are hung up on the men in their lives as their mother prepares for her third wedding. So, The Convert or North Star?
Well, the concept of The Convert is more intriguing to me. And as you know, I tend to be very suspicious of actors' directorial debuts.
Yeah,
But at the same time, this material is, you know, character focused enough and relationship focused enough that I feel like an actor really could bring something to it, especially one as talented as Kristin Scott Thomas. So I'm intrigued certainly by The Convert, but I would say North Star.
Okay. So far you and I are in agreement. That is the one that I put in bold on my little list here as hoping to get the ticket for. So we're on the same page. We should do an episode someday.
Okay.
When we do this, I always say we should do an episode. We really should do an episode about directorial debuts by actors that are good. There are, you know, mentioned A Star Is Born, great movie. Just recently, earlier this year, Shortcomings, directed by Randall Park, came out a really good movie. So there are definitely good ones.
I'm a fan of Ordinary People. I know that a lot of people are upset about it because it beat Raging Bull, but for Best Picture. But Ordinary People is still a pretty damn good movie.
All right, you want the next matchup?
Yeah.
Okay, we have an Argentine film, I never know how to say that, directed by Rodrigo Moreno. It's called The Delinquents.
Okay.
Argentinian writer-director Rodrigo Moreno reinvents the heist movie from the inside out with this playful, inventive story about work-life balance. There's not very much to that, but here's the first of the full synopsis. Imagine this. You work at a bank in Cordoba, Argentina. It's a steady, undemanding job, maybe a little dull, but you do it well. Then one day, a coworker tells you he's stolen $650,000 and wants you to stash it for him for a while. You'll get half. That's all there is to it. Just keep quiet. That's obviously not all there is to it, because this movie's three hours long.
Oh my gosh.
So that is up against Kidnapped, an Italian film directed by Marco Bellocchio, who must be 100 years old, because his first film was Fists in the Pocket, which came out in the 60s.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the latest...
Maybe he directed that when he was 10 or something. Yeah.
The latest by legendary Italian director Marco Bellocchio is a grand historical fresco depicting the scandalous true story of a young Jewish child who in mid-19th century Bologna was abducted from his family by the church under the Pope's orders. Okay, so you've got The Delinquents or Kidnapped.
I think I'm inclined to say Kidnapped.
Okay.
If for no other reason than it's always interesting, like, when an old school director is, like, still making stuff. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, sometimes they're able to adapt to, like, new styles of filmmaking. Other times they don't, and they just still make stuff their own way. And I always find that interesting. And the story sounds just fascinating. Like, having recently watched Philomena, I'm fascinated by stories of, like, the church, the Catholic Church in particular, and, like, their relationship to, like, families and that sort of thing. And so Delinquents does sound interesting, but I would say, and I've already forgotten the title.
Kidnapped.
I'd say that one.
Okay.
Which one are you more inclined? I was leaning
towards The Delinquents.
Oh, okay.
Because it sounds funny.
Sure. I mean, it does sound like sort of a heist version of like Office Space or something.
Right, yeah. okay, next up. An American film directed by Brian Helgeland.
Oh, okay.
Called Finest Kind, but all one word. Finest Kind.
Finest Kind.
I
think that's a German word. Finest Kind.
Finest Kind. Ben Foster, Toby Wallace, Tommy Lee Jones, and Jenna Ortega star in this new crime drama from Brian Helgeland about a crew of fishermen who tread dangerous waters after their debts start piling up. Okay.
Okay. Who's the cast again?
Ben Foster, Tommy Lee Jones, and Jenna Ortega. And then also Toby Wallace, but I don't know who that is. Okay.
That name sounds familiar.
And that is up against Radu Jude's new movie, Do Not Expect Too Much from the End of the World. Radu Jude, whose previous film Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn won the Golden Bear at the 2021 Berlin Film Festival, is back with a cutting satire full of twists, turns, and speed bumps. Let's see. His latest touches on labor, exploitation, death, and the new gig economy, part comedy, part road movie, part montage. It centers around Angela, a bombastic production assistant working 16-hour days while in her own time honing a quippy online brand featuring her alter ego, a self-pronounced friend of misogynistic media personality Andrew Tate. So definitely touching on...
Yeah.
As Roddy Judy, I mean, Bad Luck Banging was very much a COVID movie that not just... It was very much about the response to COVID. So he's clearly a guy who makes, like,
relevant cutting movies.
but really cutting goofy satires about current events. And that's up against Brian Helgeland's new crime movie, Finest Kind.
That's tough because on one hand, I think... I keep forgetting the names. What's the name of the second one?
Do Not Expect Too Much from the End of the World.
That sounds more delightful and more risky. But at the same time, like, there are certain actors that I always find interesting, and Ben Foster's one of them. I just feel like he makes really interesting choices as an actor, both in the parts that he plays and how he plays them. And the idea of him being possibly the lead of this movie, especially, and, you know, paired with Tommy Lee Jones.
And Jenna Ortega. She's so hot right now.
Yeah. And I've liked Brian Helgeland for the most part. I assume that he also wrote the script because he started as a writer. So I feel like, you know, it's the safer option, but I would say probably Finest Kind.
Okay. Yeah, you might be right.
I'm sure the other one would be a lot of fun, though.
Yeah. No, I think I'm going to go with the other one, but I'm going to try. I might try and find a way to see Finest Kind.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we're doing this.
Okay.
Because
Brian Helgeland, he wrote and directed Payback, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and, I do like that a lot.
A Knight's Tale.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yeah, and Legend, not the Tom Cruise Legend, the Tom Hardy and Tom Hardy Legend.
And he's co-written a lot of movies. He co-wrote L.A. Confidential, so he's reliable, I think, as a filmmaker.
Okay, I'm so glad we're doing it, because this is so frustrating.
Oh, okay.
This is a film festival. It's for films. It's not for television.
Oh, boy.
But increasingly there is television. So I had, as a possibility, what I thought was the new Lulu Wang, the director of The Farewell, Lulu Wang feature. Turns out they're just showing one episode of her upcoming 6-part limited series. Boo.
I don't like that.
So that's out.
Oh, and by the way, I feel like this is partially our fault. And by our, I mean, like, the world of online film critics, because when you have people saying, like, oh, one of the best movies of the year is Twin Peaks, The Return.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is not a movie. I don't care. Like, you're just looking for an excuse to talk about it as much as you can.
Yeah.
But it's not a movie, and there's nothing wrong with it being a TV show. TV is an amazing medium. And just let it be what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I feel like the lines have been blurred so much as far as, like, the quality and the budget that I think a lot of people are like, well, it's just, it's the same. It's like, no, it really isn't. And yeah, I know there aren't a lot of TV festivals out there, but whatever, like you said, this is a film festival. Just let it be that.
Yeah. Okay. Or I guess if you are going to show TV, like, if you like show all 6 episodes, do that. That's like top of the lake, like all 5 episodes screened at Sundance.
Oh, that's cool.
What was the, OJ Made in America is like 6 hours. Yeah. That played is like one thing with a intermission. Do the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the next actual competition, and I don't have either of these highlighted because I had planned on the Lulu Wang one. It's called We Grown Now, GROWN.
Okay.
We Grown Now. Two young boys, best friends Malik and Eric, discover the joys and hardships of growing up in the sprawling Cabrini Green public housing complex in 1992 Chicago, in the latest film from director Minhal Baig, who made a movie called Hala, H-A-L-A, which I saw at AFI Fest 2019.
Okay. How was that?
Hollow was fine. Yeah. Well-made coming-of-age story. This is another coming-of-age story. Yeah. But it's got the Chicago period piece thing that intrigues me.
Right.
Next up, directed by Michael Winterbottom.
Oh, okay.
A movie called Shoshana, set in British Mandatory Palestine. This tense historical thriller from Michael Winterbottom weaves a story of star-crossed love with one of political radicalization. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Here's the origins. 1938, tensions run high in Tel Aviv with the British struggle to maintain order among a mixed Palestinian Jewish population. English police officer lives there. He's in love with an Israeli woman. His superior officer is played by Harry Melling. That seems to be the only name here that I really know. The main character is Douglas Booth is the actor. I don't know who that is.
I think I know who that is.
Okay.
I think he was in... There was a Romeo and Juliet a few years ago. Oh, and okay. I think he might have played Romeo. Okay. I might be thinking of someone else, though.
Yeah, works out. And then the Shoshana is played by Irina Starshenbaum.
Okay.
So, We Grown Now or Shoshana?
I think Shoshana, honestly.
Yeah.
Like yourself, I'm intrigued by the period piece element and the Chicago element of We Grown Now. But I do like... You know, when people talk about, like, the Israel-Palestine situation, you know, it'd be interesting to see, like, how things work when you have a third element thrown in, which is the British, you know, and before mm-hmm. the State of Israel was established. So I feel like that's interesting. And then in the midst of that, having some kind of romance, I like that sort of thing a lot. And I like Michael Winterbottom. I think he's always an interesting director to me.
Yeah, he's definitely interesting. He can be hit or miss because I haven't the last couple of his I saw, The Wedding Guest and Greed. I didn't really like it. Greed was one of the last press screenings I went to before the COVID shutdown.
Okay.
I didn't really like either of those. So, but obviously he's made some great movies in the past.
Yeah.
Okay. So next up. A French film called Les Indésirables, or the Indesirables.
Okay.
It's like Les Miserables, but it's Les Indésirables.
Got it.
The Indesirables. And so this is directed by Lodge Lee. I don't know if you're saying that. He made a movie a few years ago called Les Miserables that was not an adaptation of Les Miserables. It was a modern-day police... And police and underprivileged minority youth story that was set in the, like I said, modern day neighborhood where Victor Hugo lived when he wrote Les Miserables.
Oh, that's why.
So set largely in an underprivileged Parisian suburb, seems like he's sticking with the same thing. Lodge Lee's follow-up to Les Miserables 2019 is an incendiary indictment of racist policies that force the poor into unsafe and inadequate living conditions.
Okay.
So he's definitely, working along the same. When the existing mayor suddenly dies, a family doctor finds himself chosen as interim mayor, but he's woefully unfamiliar with the less affluent members of his constituency and soon realizes he's in over his head.
Okay.
So that's up against a new documentary called Silver Dollar Road. A black family in North Carolina battles decades of harassment by land developers trying to seize their waterfront property in this searing documentary by Oscar-nominated director Raoul Peck, who made I Am Not Your Negro, which is an amazing movie.
Yeah.
But then he also made that biopic The Young Karl Marx, which was a snooze. So, but this is him back in documentary mode.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where he's... most comfortable. So Les Indésirables, we're definitely working on like poor, like minorities being like, you know, buffeted by the winds of privilege and or power and bureaucracy. So Les Indésirables or Silver Dollar Road.
Well, they both sound pretty good. I think probably Les Indésirables.
Okay.
Just because it's always interesting to me where someone like realizes that there are certain elements of humanity that they're just not connected with, and then what they do about that, like what happens like internally and then what they do and their actions. I always like those kind of stories. There is the potential for it to be like kind of self-righteous, I suppose, but I feel like there's enough potential there that it's worth seeing.
Okay. So I'm still thrown off because of the expats thing. I hadn't actually highlighted either of those, but now they're both very much in play because of the expats thing. All right, next up. The Peasants. This is a Polish film from the directors of Loving Vincent. The Peasants is a cinematic pageant about a 19th century Polish village where a beautiful maiden marries a widowed landowner while nursing a burning love for his son. Okay, not to give it away, but fuck yeah, that sounds awesome.
It's pretty hot.
And that is up against a documentary called Mountain Queen, The Summits of Lhakpa Sherpa. The first Nepali woman to summit and descend Mount Everest, now a single mom working at a Connecticut Whole Foods, heads back to Everest to make a better life for her two daughters. That actually sounds really good, too. So I didn't see Loving Vincent. Lucy Walker, the director of Mountain Queen, her last film was a documentary called Bring Your Own Brigade, which was about wildfires, focusing specifically on the both Southern and Northern California wildfires of 2017, I think.
Is it that long ago?
Well, I mean, we have them every year. I can't remember when. What year was Paradise, California? Because that's...
Right.
That's part
of it. I guess that was a while ago.
Yeah. I could be wrong about the year, but I thought it was 2017.
They both sound really good.
Yeah, they do both sound really good.
I think maybe the... what are the names again?
The Peasants and Mountain Queen.
I think Mountain Queen.
Okay.
I think that... I mean, they both sound really good.
Yeah, they do. I was leaning Peasants, but...
And I was, too, for a moment, but one thing that I'm increasingly interested in is the idea of someone like doing some amazing thing and then just living a regular life and a very unglamorous one, and just seeing like, I did this amazing thing once and now here I am. That dynamic is something I always find interesting, so I would say Mountain Green.
Okay. Let's see. Next up, this is a real Sophie's choice for me. Well, I'll tell you why at the end it's actually not, but Viggo Mortensen's The Dead Don't Hurt.
Okay.
Set in the 1860s, Viggo Mortensen's second outing as writer-director after 2020's Falling, which I didn't see, is an elegantly realized feminist western starring Mortensen and Vicky Creeps as immigrants attempting to forge a life in a corrupt Nevada town. Sounds great. But hold up, because it's up against Larry Charles' Dix, the musical. Larry Charles, director of Borat, conducts an uproarious musical comedy riff on The Parent Trap that follows a pair of identical twins who conspire to reunite their divorced and disturbingly deranged parents, played by Nathan Lane and Megan Mullally.
Oh, man. That is tough. I think it's got to be Dix.
Okay.
If nothing, if for no other reason, then, you know, so far the festival sounds pretty dour.
Right.
And so you might need a nice, ridiculous thing. And Larry Charles is hit or miss with me. He directed Religious, which I thought was a deeply flawed documentary. Sure. And no, not just because I'm a Christian. But he also did Borat, which I love. And so, yeah, I think that one. And it's like, you know, a deranged riff on The Parent Trap, which I'm all in favor of. So probably that one, but it's close.
Okay.
Vicky Creeps. I don't think I've seen her since Phantom Thread.
Oh, yeah, you didn't. Well, yeah, you were not able to see Corsage last year, which is amazing. Okay. You're telling me you didn't see The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest?
No, I did not. I still remember. Do you remember after Jean Dujardin won Best Actor, and there was a, I think it might have been like College Humor or Cracked. Maybe it was SNL, actually. I don't remember. But basically, it's like, hey, you're a foreign guy. You won an Oscar, so here's all the villain roles that you're going to be reading for. And so, like, the stuff that they give him to say his letters, it's like, and so he's like, nice try, Elizabeth Salander, but your dragon tattoo cannot save you now.
Yeah. Girl That Kicked the Hornet's Nest, completely forgotten movie. Because So David Fincher made The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo with the intention of completing the trilogy.
Yeah.
That's why Joel Kinnaman is in the first movie, but it has like one line. Because I guess that character is supposed to be a big deal. But I guess the movie wasn't big enough. They didn't make either of the sequels. Yeah. Instead, they jumped to the posthumous sequel not written by Stieg Larsson and adapted that with... who was it? Alicia Vikander? No, who was the girl who kicked the hornet's nest? I don't even remember. I just remember Vicky Creeps was in it.
It's someone notable. I think. I mean, I didn't see it. It wasn't even really on my radar.
Oh, wait, no, it's not. Yeah, wait, is it the girl who kicked the hornet's nest? Do I even have the right... movie?
Well, what are the other ones called?
There's The Girl Who Played With Fire.
Right.
The Girl in the Spider Web.
Okay. And I know that they...
I can't even find this movie.
Oh, okay. Well, look up Vicky Creeps.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Go backwards with it.
Yeah.
And then I know that they did... I think they did the whole trilogy, like, in the country of origin, right?
That was all done before.
That was before
the the David Fincher one. That was Noomi Rapace played.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, those. Yes.
It was The Girl in the Spider's Web, not The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest.
Okay.
The Girl in the Spider's Web, and it was Claire Foy.
Oh,
whom I like.
I do too.
But it wasn't a very good movie.
Oh, that's too bad.
Directed by Fede Alvarez, who did Don't Breathe.
Yeah, I like him.
I mean, I like Don't Breathe. I didn't see his Evil Dead.
A lot of horror people really love it. They think it's solid.
Okay, back to this bullshit.
Yeah.
The new Wim Wenders actually has two new movies coming out fall. One, this one, a fictional narrative, and then he also has a documentary called Anselm coming out. But this is called Perfect Days. Wim Wenders returns with a poignant character study and a deeply moving poetic reflection on finding beauty in the everyday world around us. Let's see. Koji Yakusho plays Hirayama, a cleaner of toilets. He lives alone in a small house full of plants. His days go according to quiet rhythms and never seem to change. He tries to work in his minivan, fully clear. So this sounds like Patterson, in Japan.
Okay.
Directed by Wim Wenders. And not to put my thumb on the scale, this has already played at Telluride and is getting rave reviews.
Okay.
So.
What's that one called again?
Perfect Days.
Perfect Days.
And then next up, a Chinese film. So you got Japan against China. Chinese film called Snow Leopard. The director's already passed away. The late Pima Seddon directed this beautiful tale of a majestic but deadly snow leopard and its complicated relationship with the communities of the Tibetan Plateau. That sounds fucking cool, too.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, when's the last time Wim Wenders made a narrative? I feel like it's been a while, right?
It has been a while, and I think his more recent narrative films have not been as well received.
Okay.
So this, I think maybe that's part of why this is getting such rave reviews, is it's like, he's back.
Well, like, you know, quiet and meditative. It's like, all right, well, you know, he does that pretty well.
Yeah.
Damn, it's close, but I would say Perfect Days.
Okay, that's where I'm leaning. But I don't think I'd read the full description of Snow Leopard.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That's... that's tempting. But yeah, we're on the same page. All right, next up. Craig Gillespie's Dumb Money.
I saw a trailer for this.
Okay, Paul Dano and Seth Rogen find themselves on opposite ends during a tug of war in Craig Gillespie's take on the outrageous battle of wits between amateur investors and hedge fund billionaires that became the infamous GameStop Wall Street scandal. So this is a movie about the GameStop.
Yeah.
I
know very little about. There was a documentary about it, so I feel like I'd like to watch that. It's got a good cast in general, not just those two guys. There's a lot of people in it, I think.
Oh, yeah? I hadn't scrolled down. Pete Davidson, Shailene Woodley, and America Ferrara. Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And against that, a new Alex Gibney musical biodoc. In Restless Dreams, the Music of Paul Simon. This definitive portrait of Paul Simon follows him inside the studio making his new album, Seven Psalms, while looking back on his six-decade career with countless musical peaks from Sounds of Silence to Graceland.
Well, I mean, I'm intrigued to see Alex Gibney not do an expose.
But he's done the musical thing before, because he did the James Brown one.
Right.
It's called, I can't remember what that was called.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw the James Brown one when it aired on HBO. I mean, it was very Alex Gibney. I learned a lot. But I don't remember what it was called.
Are you a Craig Gillespie fan?
Well, he did I, Tonya?
He did I, Tonya. He did Hustle and Flow.
I didn't see.
Know he did.
Did he do Hustle and Flow?
I think he did. I feel like that's what.
Scott and Julie and I just had this same conversation on the fall movie preview.
Whether he did Hustle and Flow?
Because he didn't. Didn't the dude who did Hustle and Flow also do Black Snake Moan?
I think so. And I think that's Craig Gillespie. That's what I was about to say.
No, but that's Craig Brewer.
Craig Brewer.
Okay.
Different Craig.
Yep.
This also happens with me with Gareth Edwards and Gareth Evans.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah, very understandable. Yeah. Craig Gillespie did Lars and the Real Girl, The Finest Hours, Million Dollar Arm. I mean, I didn't see any of those.
Okay.
But it's just
So Craig Brewer, I think I'm a fan of him. I'm not a huge fan of Lars and the Real Girl. And I don't think I saw any of the other ones.
I saw I, Tonya.
I saw I, Tonya. And I didn't necessarily love that one either.
But we loved our friend.
Paul Walter Hauser. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of performances I like in it. So it was Dumb Money. What was the other one? Alex, give me about Paul Simon.
It's called In Restless Dreams.
I'd say that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because one of my problems with I, Tonya is I feel like the movie is like openly making fun of some of its characters.
Okay.
And so I feel like Dumb Money would not be able to resist that. And that's something I tend not to like.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right, we're going to take a pause after this one because I don't have another one. I've been trying to stay on top of getting stuff pulled up. But so the next matchup, His Three Daughters, the new movie from Azazel Jacobs. He did, what was the one with Deborah Winger and the guy we love?
Paul Walter Hauser?
No. The actor, playwright, is married to Carrie Coon. What is his name? Oh, my God.
No, I don't recall.
He's in that one episode of Seinfeld.
Oh, Tracy Letts.
Tracy Letts.
Yeah, okay.
I love that that's where what got you there.
Yeah, that's who I thought at first, but I thought, like, he's kind of old for Carrie Coon.
Well, it's never stopped anyone before.
Yeah, and I guess he is very talented, so he can do what he wants. That's how we operate, right?
Yeah. Okay, so that's his... Oh, I didn't read the description. A tense, captivating, and touching portrait of family dynamics starring Carrie Coon, Elizabeth Olsen, and Natasha Lyonne as sisters who converge after their father's health declines. Oh, so it's kind of like Hanging Up.
Yeah. Combined with...
Got a lot in common
with The Savages.
Hanging Up, The Savages. Yeah, Savage is a good movie. Hanging Up was meant to be a laugh reference because not a good movie, as I recall. I don't know. I saw it on a plane, so it might have been edited for content. Maybe it's great. So, his three daughters.
Okay.
And that's against another documentary called Stamped from the Beginning, inspired by the book of the same name by Dr. Ibram X. Kendi. Oscar-winning filmmaker Roger Ross Williams, Stamped from the Beginning. I don't know what he won his Oscar for. Explores the history of anti-black ideas in a way that helps us grapple with present day racism.
Let's see. What's the cast of the other one again?
It is Carrie Coon, Elizabeth Olsen, and Natasha Lyonne.
Damn.
I feel like this one's kind of a layup.
Yeah, I think that one. Just because... Yeah. All three of those actresses are fascinating. I love the choices they make.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'd be nice to see Carrie Coon and Elizabeth Olsen again after Infinity War. Carrie Coon plays...
I know that. I just completely forgot that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And I love that. I mean, it's because of Poker Face, which is fine, but I love that Natasha Lyonne, like, I saw her in a commercial recently.
Oh,
like,
she's doing a bunch of Old Navy commercials.
Yeah, and I'm just glad that she's seeing, like, kind of this career renaissance, because I feel like, yeah, she's in this, she's amazing in Poker Face, and just, like, she's been around for a while, and she's always been, you know, super interesting as an actress, and so I like that. As we know, like, when younger actresses start to get older, like, a lot of opportunities tend to dry up. But, you know, she's the lead in her own series.
Yeah.
And so I'm really happy for her right now.
Yeah, she's, she's great. I also like, I normally don't like commercials at all.
But right.
The, like, message behind those Old Navy commercials is that, like, it's about how it's like women have a difficult time like accepting compliments because they feel like they have to be humble or whatever, or they have to be like demure, and that it's like, hey, just take the compliment. It's just like, thanks, it's Old Navy or whatever. I really like that.
Yeah. Yet another thing that I have in common with the female population. Someone says, hey, Tyler, you know, these days a lot of people have been saying like, Tyler, your bravery in the middle of this is really inspiring. I'm like, well, what the fuck else am I gonna do? You know, I literally can't like give up. I got this damn ventilator keeping me alive.
Okay. I don't know this director. Which one did you said his three daughters? Okay, so the next matchup. This one is called Mother Couch. Okay. It's directed by someone named Nicholas Larson. This is on here. I don't know the director. Okay. I didn't really look what it was about. Wait till we get to the cast.
Okay.
Three estranged children come together when their mother refuses to move from a couch in a furniture store. In this film, boasting all-star talent, including Battleship Retention favorite Taylor Russell.
Okay.
Ewan McGregor, Ellen Burstyn, F. Murray Abraham, Laura Flynn Boyle, and Rhys Ifans.
Damn.
Right?
That's a good cast.
Yep. Yeah. So, putting that up against a movie called Arthur and Diana. Writer-director Sarah Summa stars alongside her real-life brother, Robin Summa, in this playful, auto-fictional road trip from Berlin to Paris. Siblings Arthur and Diana are en route from Berlin to Paris, and their late father's run out with Diana's adorable two-year-old son in tow. blah, 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 on the shared car, rusted childhood relic. They also plan. So it's a road trip movie about siblings.
Okay.
So Mother Couch, which is also about siblings dealing with a mother.
Right.
And Arthur and Diana, sibling road trip.
Now, let me ask you this. When you read the name of the director of, was it Arthur and Diana?
Yeah.
Do you read it in Howard Kramer's voice?
I do, yeah. Have yeah, a summer.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, it's interesting. I feel like there are a lot of movies at this Toronto Film Festival that can be described as like three siblings get together
yeah.
when their parent blank. And so when you started reading that one, I was just like, damn, man, come on. And then it's like refuses to move from a couch in a furniture store. And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
All right, I'll allow it. I would probably say that one.
Yeah, that's where I'm
just from the cast alone.
Yeah.
And I assume the mom is played by Ellen Burstyn, which yeah. would be very exciting.
Yeah. What I didn't say earlier is that, you know, these movies tend to play more than once at the festival.
Yeah.
So, like, I said that, like, The Dead Don't Hurt and Dicks the Musical yeah. was a Sophie's Choice. If things work out for me the way I want them to, I will actually be able to see both
That's
of
cool.
those. But yeah, sometimes it doesn't work out. Yeah. Okay, next matchup. Let's see. This one is called Wicked Little Letters. It's directed by Fia Sharrock, who made a movie a few years ago called Me Before You with Amelia Clark.
That's right.
So this is Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley.
Wow.
Like,
there you go.
I don't together, know how much more you have to say.
Together again.
Play neighbors who get on each other's nerves in this dark comedy about a small English town where residents start receiving anonymous, expletive-laden letters igniting a scandal in their community. That sounds very fun.
That sounds very good.
Putting that up against Quiz Lady, directed by Jessica Yu. From Oscar winner Jessica Yu, what do you think? What did she win her Oscar for?
Short film.
Well, I know she made that documentary In the Realm of the Senses. Or not In the Realm of the Senses.
That's a very
In the Realms of the Unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah, In the Realm of the Senses is a Japanese erotic movie. In the Realms of the Unreal. Maybe she won an Oscar for In the Realms of the Unreal? I don't know. But she's also directed, like, animated. Oh, maybe she won, like, Best Animated Feature?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, maybe.
From Oscar winner Jessica Yu comes a comedy starring Awkwafina and Sandra Oh as two very different sisters who are forced to pay off their mother's gambling debts by concocting a scheme to go on a quiz show. So, again, you got siblings dealing with a parent.
Boy. And what was the first one called?
Wicked Little Letters.
And the next one?
Quiz Lady.
I think Wicked Little Letters.
Yeah.
Partially because, and this is just me, I'm not a big fan of Awkwafina. Although I haven't seen her in a dramatic role.
But, well, yeah, that's
but,
the thing.
But like, comedically, I don't like her very much. However, I'm always eager to see Olivia Colman in a comedy. I feel like, you know, because she won an Oscar, she's like respectable now. And even though her performance in The Favourite is often very funny, I think that she's viewed as like, you know, a dramatic actress now.
Okay, so Wicked Little Letters it is. Moving on, and now we have a hard out. Because you've got physical therapy.
Yeah.
Ellen Curris directed a movie called Lee. Oscar winner Kate Winslet stars in this fascinating portrait of the great American photojournalist Lee Miller, whose singular talent and ferocious tenacity gave us some of the 20th century's most indelible images.
Okay.
So, biopic about Lee Miller, directed by Ellen Curris, the cinematographer who has worked with, like, Spike Lee and all kinds of people. And that's up against a movie that I'm very interested in called Mambar Pierrette. It's from Belgium and Belgium/Cameroon. So this narrative feature debut by established Cameroonian documentarian Rosina Mbakam, and she made a movie a couple of years ago called Prism, which is why she's a documentary, which is why she's on this list for me, is a moving portrait of fortitude and care centered on a valiant seamstress and single mother in Douala. So Pierrette lives in Douala. She's a seamstress. Yeah, I think you get it, right?
Yeah.
So, Lee or Mambar Pierrette?
I feel shitty saying this because they both sound good. And I want to champion documentaries where I can. That's a documentary, right?
No, neither one is a documentary.
Oh, she made a documentary. That's right.
This is her first. She's first. A documentarian. This is her first non-documentary.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too, to me, actually.
Which, look, last year at TIFF, what ended up being my second favorite movie of the year was Saint-Omer, which is also by a female documentarian with African roots making her first feature. So maybe that's why Manbar Piaret leapt out at me.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds interesting. At the same time, I can't think of the last time I saw Kate Winslet. I know she's always working. I mean, I guess she was in Avatar, but...
Yeah, yeah. And there was Mayor of Easttown, which I didn't see.
That's right, which I heard great things about. But yeah, like, I'd be interested in seeing Lee, I think.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what was the last thing I saw her in. There was that... Now I can't remember what it was called.
I mean, the Dressmaker was a long time ago now, right?
No, before that... I mean, since then, there was... the movie, it had a big cast, and it was also, like... adult children coming together because their mom, Susan Sarandon, is dying.
Oh.
What was that called?
Oh, wow. I don't remember.
That was called... Oh, wait. I did see Ammonite. That was the last thing I saw her in.
Okay.
But the one I'm talking about is called Blackbird, directed by the late Roger Michell.
Oh, okay.
And that the cast is pretty crazy there. It's Sam Neill, Susan Sarandon, Kate Winslet, Rainn Wilson... Lindsay Duncan and Mia Wasikowska.
Now, this is not the Blackbird with that guy we love, Paul Walter Hauser.
Wait, did he make a movie called Blackbird?
No, it's a miniseries that he, like, has been winning a lot of stuff for.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're picking the Kate Winslet one.
Yeah, Lee.
Okay, so your next matchup. Actor slash director Tony Goldwyn. This is not a directorial debut. He's made numerous films before. Has a new movie called Ezra. Bobby Cannavale, Rose Byrne, and Robert De Niro star in this fabulously unpredictable ensemble dramedy from director Tony Goldwyn about parents struggling over how best to raise their child. So this is the other way around.
Yeah.
It's about parents and children. So that's Ezra, and that's up against the new Alexander Payne, The Holdovers. Paul Giamatti stars in Alexander Payne's latest about the bond that forms between a strict professor and a belligerent student he's stuck supervising over the winter holiday at an elite boarding school.
That one.
Yeah.
I've seen the trailer for it. It looks like a fun throwback. And it looks like... Yeah, it sounds like kind of old school... Alexander Payne, which I'm all in favor of. And it looks like Paul Giamatti is having a lot of fun, which is good.
Well, I'll repeat what I said on the fall movie preview. It's just, I'm glad that Billions is ending and maybe we'll get Paul Giamatti back in movies.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen Billions?
No, I never watched it.
I'm curious about it. I mean, I like everyone involved. But yeah, part of me feels like, well, I've already seen Succession. I feel like that's enough.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I got nothing but time, so maybe I'll get to it.
But, I did the math. That I didn't see Jungle Cruise, so the last time I saw Paul Giamatti in a movie was Private Life, which was 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
BP nominee, I believe, for Best Actor for that.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Okay. Next up. The new Tarsem Singh movie, Dear Jassy, which is, with his first film set in India, Tarsem Singh returns to the big screen to tell the shocking true life tale of a young couple desperate to be together. Kept apart. 90s. I don't know. Okay, so you get it. We got to get through this.
Although I will say that many years ago, our roommate... Cole, he and I talked about that our goal in our romantic relationships is to someday, in an argument, just say, I just want to be with you.
Yeah.
And then many years later, Jen and I were in an argument, and I said that organically. And then I started, like, smiling in the midst of this argument.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because I do have a point to make, but I feel like it's just been undercut.
Yeah.
But I was really excited that that I got to use that in real life.
So that's Dear Jesse, and that's up against a new film, I guess, co-directed by Sean Levy and Stephen Knight called All the Light We Cannot See. Canadian Sean Levy brings Anthony Doerr's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel to the screen with an ensemble cast including Mark Ruffalo and Hugh Laurie. August 1944, France. There's a blind girl hiding. She broadcasts radio stories. People hear them, including Nazi soldiers. Wait. God damn it.
What?
Is this another TV thing?
Oh.
Fuck that. Nope, that's not...
All right.
Wait, what?
Out of contention.
Yeah, so now that is going to be up against... wait, what did I say? What was the first one I just did? Dear Jesse.
Yeah.
That's going to be up against Fallen Leaves, which is the new Aki Kaurismäki movie. Two solitary people in Helsinki look for a way out of their loneliness in this warm-hearted, tragicomic triumph from Aki Kaurismäki. His recent movies include Le Havre and... what was the other one about the restaurant that was so funny? Anyway, he's a deadpan...
Yeah.
Scandinavian Finnish, I think? Finnish director. Yeah, Helsinki. Finnish director. Beloved by Jim Jarmusch.
Oh, okay.
That's why the one... There's one of the...
Night on Earth.
Night on Earth that takes place in Helsinki.
Yeah.
And he used, like, people from...
Yeah.
The Man Without a Past was more recent. What was the other one I'm looking for? What was the other one I saw that I liked? Oh, The Other Side of Hope. I liked that. Okay.
I'll be honest, just on the premise of either one, they're not that interesting to me, and I'm unfamiliar with them as, well, Tarsem Singh I know a little bit. What's the name of the other one?
Dear Jesse or Fallen Leaves?
Fallen Leaves. Between the two, I mean, it's kind of a coin flip for me. I'd probably say Fallen Leaves.
That's where I'm leaning. Okay. Next up, Hot Ticket. The new Miyazaki. The Boy and the Heron.
Oh, boy.
I don't even know if I need to tell you what it's about. It's the new Miyazaki. But already acclaimed as a masterpiece in Japan, Hayao Miyazaki's new film begins as a simple story of loss and love and rises to become a staggering work of imagination. Putting that up against the new Michel Franco movie, which is he's back to working in the English language, I guess. It's called Memory. Past, present, and future collide when Saul, Peter Sarsgaard, follows Sylvia, Jessica Chastain, home from their high school reunion in this touching and masterful film by director Michel Franco. So.
That's actually tough, but...
I don't know. Jessica Chastain being in a movie is... I mean, I know she's talented, but she can't pick him.
So, and isn't that... I mean, isn't that crazy? Like, think about, like, 10 years ago, I mean, she, you know, Take Shelter, Tree of Life, Zero Dark Thirty, like, she was so reliable, and she is as an actress, but yeah, and I do love Peter Sarsgaard, but at the end, and I like the idea of like, different times kind of clash, kind of bashing together, but, I mean, at the same time, like, it's Miyazaki, you know, and... Yeah. He basically retired after The Wind Rises, and so, like, any movie that, like, brings a director out of retirement is one that I think is always worth watching, especially when it's somebody like him. So I'd say that one.
Okay. Next up, a film by a director named Dominic Savage. Oh, it's called Close to You. Okay. Sam, Elliot Page, has a chance encounter with an old friend on his way home to a dreaded family reunion that forces him to confront long-buried memories. So I think I put this on because I think this is the first movie that Elliot Page has done since coming out. I know he did another series of... What's the show that he... Umbrella Academy? Is that him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought...
Was there another movie?
I think there was.
Oh, maybe.
But now I don't remember.
I just missed it. Okay. So that's Close to You. But that's up against, and I may have given away the game before we recorded by telling you how excited I was about this movie. The new film by Adam McGoyan. It's called Seven Veils. Adam McGoyan and his Chloe star Amanda Seyfried reunite for this naughty naughty psychodrama about a young theater director forced to re-examine her own trauma while working on a remount of Salome. Come on. That's awesome.
That sounds great.
Yeah, Seven Veils.
For some reason, it kind of feels like a Black Swan, Red Shoes kind of situation, which is intriguing. And I like Adam McGoyan and Amanda Seyfried. Like, you know, she's someone who has just been making great choices and doing great work in the last few years.
Yeah. I also think Adam McGoyan and naughty K-N-O-T-T-Y psychodrama are kind of like, it's a little bit redundant.
Yeah.
That's kind of what he does. Friend of the show, Adam McGoyan, by the way.
It could just say, Adam McGoyan made a film.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, so it's a naughty psychodrama?
Yeah. Got it. All right. I said we had to rush, and then I'm getting ahead.
I'm so bummed that I wasn't here for the Adam McGoyan episode, but, like, you know, there were some difficulties with, like, the birth mother's pregnancy, and so
that's what it was.
Jen and I had to, like, suddenly go down to Arizona. But, yeah. And obviously everything turned out okay, but I am definitely bummed that I was not able to join you for that episode.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Next up, film directed by a man named Greg Quidar. It's called Sing Sing. A theater troupe finds escape from the realities of incarceration through the creativity of putting on a play, in this film based on a real-life rehabilitation program and featuring a cast that includes formerly incarcerated actors. It also includes Coleman Domingo. He's the big name.
Oh, but nice.
I think most of the rest of the cast are ex-convicts.
He's good in everything, but, like, after Zola, it's like, I'll watch him in anything.
Yeah, you saw Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Yeah, he's great in that. Great. Well, everyone's great in that, but yeah, he's just a very reliable actor.
All right, so that's up against Taika Waititi's new film, Next Goal Wins. Michael Fassbender, Elizabeth Moss, and Oscar Keitley, star in Waititi's comedy about the American Samoa soccer team's attempt to make a World Cup 12 years after their infamous 31-0 loss in a 2002 World Cup qualifying match. So this is, I saw this documentary when it came out, and my first thought was like, well, someone's going to make that into a movie, because it's the story itself is like so charming. The people are so charming. It's so funny. So Sing Sing or Next Goal Wins?
I think Sing Sing, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Next Goal, I mean, it sounds interesting, but at this point, like, you can't always tell with Taika Waititi. Like, I like Jojo Rabbit more than most of the friends we have.
I did not like Jojo Rabbit.
And I rewatched it. And I still like it, but at the same time, like, I don't know, his name is not synonymous with, like, I don't know, creative and novel, like you got in, like, What We Do in the Shadows and Hunt for the Wilder People and his first Thor movie, like, his name doesn't mean what it used to for me.
Yeah, though he is still a producer on Reservation Dogs, a.k.a. the best show on TV.
Oh, okay.
So he gets some credit for that. I think we're on the same page about Sing Sing. That was that's where I was leaning. Okay. Next up is, this one is actually a very difficult choice for me.
Okay.
And because I think the screening schedule is such that I will have to pick one.
Oh, boy.
So, the first new film in quite a while from Jonathan Glazer is The Zone of Interest. Jonathan Glazer won the Grand Prix at this year's Cannes for this horror about Auschwitz Commandant Rudolf Hess and his wife, who quite literally live amongst the ashes of their actions.
Hmm. Is it a narrative film?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is going to be up against the new Hirokazu Koreeda film, Monster. So that is acclaimed Japanese artist Hirokazu Koreeda returns to his homeland with a powerful yet delicate story of love and humanity, a moral tale about school bullying, scored by the late Ryuichi Sakamoto. So Koreeda, I feel like he shines when it comes to movies about kids, you know, and families, like like Shoplifters and stuff like that. Ryuichi Sakamoto, RIP, one of the greats, did the Merry Christmas to Lawrence score.
Oh, that is a good score.
And the Revenant score, which I didn't like the Revenant that much, but good music. So this is a very difficult choice for me between The Zone of Interest and Monster.
I don't know, man. I love, like, I very easily cite Under the Skin as one of the best movies of the 2010s. Is that the last movie Glazer's made?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that's nine years ago. I feel like I'd say that one.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm leaning.
Yeah.
But it's going to suck not
it's
to.
It's tough.
I'll see the Koreeda movie eventually, I'm sure. Although I missed his last one completely. Broker?
Oh, yeah.
I completely missed that. So I say I'll see it eventually, but who knows? Maybe I won't. Okay. David, quit John and get these things. Okay. So, next up.
I guess we could record during my physical therapy. All you'll hear is me being like,
we're into the end. Yeah. Kim Tae-yang's Mimang. This is... I think the film stage either, like said this looked interesting. That's why I put it on my list. Thefilmstage.com. Our friend Jordan, we played their game back during the COVID lockdown.
That's right.
Kim Tae-yang's feature debut, shot over 4 years, follows a man and a woman who meet by chance and stroll through Seoul's changing streets. So I think that's the hook here, is that it was shot over 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's up against another actor directing.
All right.
Knox Goes Away. Michael Keaton directs and plays Knox, a hitman losing his memory, putting him in a race against time to help his estranged son, James Marsden, cover up a messy crime. So Mimang or Knox Goes Away?
Mimang.
Okay.
And I would say it's not close.
Okay.
I love Michael Keaton. I'd be fascinated to know what he does as a director, but that premise, I don't like it at all.
Okay. Well, I thought we had one more. Sorry to be anticlimactic, but that was the last one. I was going to announce it was the last one, but everything got thrown off by the expats thing for me.
And that other one, with the Sean Levy one.
Yeah, All the Light We Cannot See.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, full disclosure, I didn't have that one highlighted, so it didn't throw me off quite as much. But like, I now have to decide what else to see instead of expats, and I don't know what.
Yeah,
I could see Shoshana, but I had planned on seeing that at a different time. So
yeah,
I'll have to mess with my my schedule a little bit.
Yeah,
but thanks for helping me narrow some stuff down.
No problem.
I'll
you're gonna do what you want anyway, but that's okay.
No, I mean, like, these conversations do help. I mean, I fucked this up. We did this preview for Sundance, and you talked me into seeing Talk to Me.
Oh, yeah.
Which I then didn't, because I got lured by the promise of a ticket to a premiere at the Eccles. Of a different, like a publicist was like, hey, we've got an extra premiere, extra ticket for the new Justin Chan. And I was like, ooh, a premiere, like, at the Echo. I'll go see that instead of the press and just screening of Talk to Me.
I just picture you fanning yourself, like, oh. I didn't know you cared.
So, so I missed Talk to Me at Sundance, but I saw it at Comic-Con.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, that's it. You can find, there'll be reviews of these, the movies. You'll be able to figure out which movies I see by which ones I review at BattleshipRetention.com. Check out my other podcast, The One Where I Met Your Mother, which I do with my wife, Natalie, who watched Friends and How I Met Your Mother. I'm on Letterboxd at David Backs. You can email me at Davey@BattleshipRetention.com, Twitter and Blue Sky at Davey Pretension. Tyler, you want to give anything out? Give out any?
No, nothing. Nothing really. I've been meaning to write another review sometime soon, but I'm not you know, we don't like to review stuff, like, you know, well after it's come out. So anything, so I'm looking, we're like, I'm keeping an eye out for like streaming premieres that fits with our brand.
Yeah.
and that sort of thing. Sorry to put it in such craven terms. But yeah, so I'll be looking for the opportunity to review something. But in the meantime, nothing really.
Okay. Well, thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.